It's really a treat on Mother's Day to have our men sing, and then on Father's Day, I understand the women will be singing. So look forward to that. Our gospel reading is from the Gospel of John, the 17th chapter. We've been reading from these powerful words of Jesus as he prepares his disciples because he's going to be leaving them, because he will be crucified, and he wants to send them forward in their life, in their ministry, with some assurance and some foundation. And so we've been reading these words of Jesus the last few weeks, and we read that from this same section of John today, beginning with the second half of the 11th verse. Holy Father, protect them, that is, protect these disciples in your name that you have given me, so that they may be one as we are one. While I was with them, I protected them in your name that you have given me. I guarded them, and not one of them was lost, except the one destined to be lost, so that the scripture might be fulfilled. But now I am coming to you, and I speak these things in the world so that they may have my joy made complete in themselves. If I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world, I'm not asking you to take them out of the world, but I ask you to protect them from the evil one. They do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is the truth. As you have sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself, so that they also may be sanctified in truth. Here ends our reading from the Gospel of John. Now, we're not going to be singing our second hymn. We've had a lot of wonderful music this morning, and I know some of you have some plans at the noon hour, so we're going to take more time, and I can preach longer if we don't sing the second hymn. After being a husband for 34 years, I think that's close, and a father of four sons, and a pastor of families for 33 years, I've come to two conclusions. The first is that every relationship within a family and every family is different from every other. That experience does not transfer from one child to another child, from one husband-wife to another husband-wife, from one family circle to another. And the second conclusion is that every relationship must chart its course through vast and subtle changes over the years. It's not easy to accept change. We resist it. Keep everything the same. I like it the old way. About 14 years ago, I visited another neighboring church on vacation. I went in for the worship service. I always like to see how somebody else does it. I like to get bulletins that you bring back from other churches you attend when you're on vacation, because I learn from that. So I went to the church. It was not too early, but a few minutes before the service started, I sat down and began to read through the bulletin to acquaint myself with the service. And as I was reading, I felt a shadow cast over me. And I looked up and saw a woman standing right in front of me. I was on the end of the pew. She was staring at me. And I thought, well, this is one way to greet strangers. I couldn't quite understand because I'd never met her before. And she looked at me very intently, and she said, "You're sitting in my seat." We don't like change, do we? And yet, in spite of our best efforts, relationships change. For one reason, individuals change. We're different people, or will be, at the age of 50 than we were at 15. And some of you say, thank God for that. The circumstances of life bring change. As a child growing up in a community of 3,500 people, my experience was different than that of our children growing up in metropolitan Los Angeles. And our relationships keep multiplying. We thought we could handle one child. Well, two children weren't bad. Three children, you see, it just began to expand. And we thought, well, when we finally get them all raised and out of the home, things will get simpler again. That's what we thought. We forgot that they usually get married or have some significant friend, and then there are grandchildren. So the relationships just keep expanding and changing. The thing that will help you hold together, I believe, in a sea of change is commitment. Someone said, commitment gives relationships a longer lease on life. I watched the woman who stood in for my mother after my own mother died take care of her husband through the ravages of cancer in the last months of his life. There was nothing that could be done in the hospital, and so she brought a hospital bed into her den. And day and night, 24 hours, through the weeks and months, she cared for him. And long ago, they had once said those daring words, "I will be with you." And she could not see his real self anymore. She could not feel his magic or hear his music anymore. She just had to believe that he was there, though his body was ravaged by the illness which finally took his life. It was that commitment that held her in the circle of his love, even when he couldn't express it. The thing you need to see in a relationship that will hold you through the changes is that your commitment has got to be to a real person and not to the person you wish he or she would be. One man said he had about given up on any kind of understanding of his adolescent tempest, Kathy. He had a friend who was a psychologist, and he asked him if he had any advice for a mixed-up father as he was going through these difficult times in understanding the turbulent mind of a teenager that he cared very deeply about. The psychologist said there are three facts that he had to remember. And you know, psychologists sometimes speak in language that's difficult to understand. He said, she is not human. Survival is the best you can hope for. And things are going to change. That was the advice he gave. And this man said, it may seem too cute and it may seem almost cruel, but it helped him because it gave him the feeling that he was not alone in his circumstances. And he began to see, as he thought about this, that these descriptions for him were things that applied more to himself than to his daughter. Statements about a teenager not being human, it sounds offhand like a put-down. But what it really had to do, he said, was his crazy notion of what his daughter should have been. He expected her to be a mature, rational, sensitive human being. But she could not be human in that way, not then, not yet. She could be and was a passionate person with a wild wave of anger at the unfairness of life. But she was not the reasonable human being that I was unrealistic enough to expect her to be at that stage of her life. The second point about survival, he said, it's true, he was having pipe dreams about his daughter being a star. Well, if not a star, at least a small asteroid up there, smiling at me while she grabbed her share of the prizes. He expected her to be perfect under praise of everyone, bringing home honor to him as a father. But she was not. And he had to realize that if he wanted to be a friend with her, he had to be a friend with her on her terms, the person she was. And things did change. He didn't know at that time what things would change, but enough changed that it became a relationship that they both could cherish and they both could grow in. Lewis Smeads was that father, is that father. And he writes, committed love is a power to surrender our right to get what we desire so that the person we love can get what he or she needs. That's a good definition for a father or a mother, or a husband or a wife. It is the call to live with a real person, and not the person you wish they might be. Another thing that will hold a family relationship together is commitment to the future, not to the past. Some spend their time regretting what has happened and can never be again, when the only way to find new life is centering on what life is asking of them now. Three things I know about the future. It will be different, and it will come, and it will come one day at a time. One couple who were celebrating their 20th anniversary, their wedding anniversary, said they never expected that they would be together 20 years after their marriage. Oh, they thought they would when they were first married. But they were both in graduate school, and they didn't have much time to nourish a relationship. They began to be more antagonistic to each other than caring for each other. They began to fight a great deal and to think, if this is what it's going to be like forever, I'm not sure I can last that long or want to commit myself that long. And so they each decided that they would commit themselves unreservedly for one day at a time. And they took the threat and the burden of forever off the relationship and found that if they could give themselves to each other one day after the next, it worked. Now, I'm not going to take that part out of the marriage ceremony which says, you know, forever and ever until death do us part, because I think the long-term commitment is important. In fact, sometimes it's the only thing that gets us through. When love is gone and the bloom wears off, it is that promise of commitment that holds us together. And yet for some people, I feel this is a good story and helpful, to understand that it may be just today that will work, and then you give it your best tomorrow, and then the day after that. And you will find that it is a commitment to the future, a short-term future, that leads you through. One important dynamic in every growing relationship that will hold you fast in the time of change is commitment to the God who meets us in the future. It is, after all, the God who is creating the future. God is within change. I'm doing a new thing. God is doing a new thing not to you, but with you and in you. That's the nature of God. So that without God, change can grind us up and spit us out. But with God, the future can bless and renew. For God is the source of forgiveness we need to live with each other, to remember that we are forgiven by those who love us more than we can ever forgive. God is the ground of our hope, that when all else is exhausted, our strength, our insight, our enthusiasm, and energy is gone. There is a hope that comes from without, from beyond ourselves, and God is that ground. It is the power of divine creative love that is a part of the equation of every growing relationship, of parents and children, of husband and wife, of children and parents. God in your family is not acknowledged and welcomed without decision and time and effort by the adults in that family. And for those of you who have children, when prayer and Sunday school become as important as soccer and grades, God has a chance at influencing the future. When I was going through my files this week in preparation for this morning, I ran across a little book that I've had for quite a few years. It's called Home Prayers for Little Children. There's not anything like this now. Our little booklets, pockets that we have each month on the credenza for families with children, each month there is a page on prayer. We have some old ones on the information table if you'd like to pick one up and take it home this morning. But I began to read through these prayers, and I began to get a sense of what it might mean for a family to nourish a child with prayer. Hear this. When I fall, I will call and know that you will hear me. Where'er I go, I will know loving hands are near me. I will pray every day that you will ever guide me. I can smile all the while with you here beside me. I submit to you that a parent who sits on the bedside of a child night after night or day after day and joins and teaches a prayer like that can believe that the children are going to have a foundation that will last them a long, long time. God made the sun, and God made the tree. God made the mountains, and God made me. I thank you, O God, for the sun and the tree, for making the mountains, and for making me. Now, there may come a time when that faith is questioned. Most of us, as adolescents, toss out that old stuff that our parents believe and that our parents taught us. And we may, in fact, find that our own children throw that stuff out too for a time. But I believe that if it has been lovingly learned, it will be a guiding spirit within the life of that child forever and ever. Change can't destroy us. It can bring us pain. It can make us miserable. But it cannot tear us apart if we renew the ties of commitment and rest on the strength beyond our own. I like these words from Lewis Smedes. When two people are committed to each other, when the inner spring of their commitment is care, each for the other. There are possibilities in the toughest situations. Not certainties, but possibilities. Not possibilities of things being all we've ever wanted them to be, but possibilities of things becoming better than they are. Good enough to make the future together as friends, as partners, as family. Better for having kept on caring for each other just a little more than we care for ourselves. Let us pray.